the Eskom CEOs are at odds over the private sector's rollout of solar power. We speak to Mr. Jacob Marocha. Welcome, sir.
Good morning.
Last week when I interviewed Mr. André de Reiter at the BizNews Investment Conference, he said that the private sector had, in a period of 18 months, added 6.1 gigawatts in rooftop solar, about the size of 1.5 Madupis. You responded by calling that statement engineering gibberish. Why?
Well, I'm not contesting that the private sector may have added 6,100 megawatts. You know, I think the record shows there's been a significant addition. But what I'm contesting and what I'm disagreeing with, and I think André will agree, is when you compare 6,000 megawatts of solar to 6,000 or to an equivalent of a coal power plant and its impact on the grid, that's where I disagree. Because solar power, which is intermittent and weather dependent, is not equivalent in terms of its reliability contribution to an equivalent 6,000 megawatts of what you call dispatchable power, baseload power. So the notion that the solar power that has been added by the private sector could have made significant contribution to the reduction of load shedding, that's what I'm contesting. And I think it's more an engineering principle rather than personality contestation to say, in South Africa, and I think, you know, when we have had a lot of load shedding, there was suggestion that by simply adding solar power to the grid, we may reduce load shedding. But my understanding and my engineering background says the only thing that has made South Africa to reduce load shedding is the improvement in the performance of the coal power stations, which at the height of load shedding, now I'm just giving you high-level figures, was around 50% of energy availability factor. And now we are hovering around 70%. And that's that improvement in the performance of the coal station is the thing that is a significant contributor to the reduction in load shedding. Yes, renewable energy is welcome. It adds to the clean energy in the system. It reduces the use of coal. But from an engineering perspective, it adds very little in terms of reliability contribution. That's really the point I was making.
So are you concerned about Eskom's increasing reliance on solar and wind?
No, I'm not concerned about Eskom's reliance on solar and wind. To an extent, they understand their contribution. And I think the guys at Eskom understand what is the limit of wind, what is the limit of solar, and what is the contribution of coal, and what is the contribution of what you call dispatchable capacity. So the idea is, yes, let's increase as much as we can the contribution of solar, the contribution of private sector. But let's understand the limits of each type of generation and what it contributes to the reliability of the grid. Because solar and wind, from a reliability perspective, does not replace the requirement for dispatchable capacity. What happens, and you know, this is now a verity all over the world where countries are going into renewable, is that rolling out renewable solar and wind does not replace the need for dispatchable power. What happens is that solar and wind requires the backup of the dispatchable capacity. So you don't replace the need, you reduce the use, but you still need this dispatchable capacity in the background, in some cases, idly, so that when wind reduces, they step in. When the sun set, they step in. And in some cases, I mean, you know, even during the day when you have a lot of solar, it can reduce by other factors, you know, cloud cover, rain. So you need both capacities to be able to produce reliable capacity. So the main point, I think, is that one doesn't replace the other. And especially renewables does not replace the need for dispatchable capacity. It works as a complement, but it needs dispatchable capacity as backup. Yes, I think South Africa, I mean, I support the rollout of renewables in South Africa. We are one of those countries that have endowed in terms of renewable capacity, particularly in the Northern Cape and Western Cape. So to an extent that we need to invest in that, we should. But we should understand, you know, how these two, you know, work together to produce a reliable grid.
It must be challenging to strongly support coal. When it took Kusile 16 years to complete at $266 billion in capex, while utility-scale solar takes 24 months at much lower cost.
Yeah, and I think let's also delve into the cost of renewable versus dispatchable capacity. There are two concepts. There is a concept of technology cost. When you look at the technology cost of solar and wind per unit, is much lower. Okay, but when you look at the system cost, everywhere where you introduce a lot of renewables at a large scale, an example I can give you, two examples I can give you. Germany and the UK, they are far advanced in the introduction of renewables into their grid. But those two countries have the most expensive electricity in the world. And the question is, why is it so? And this is the most important part. Because you cannot run only on renewables, you have to have this backup of dispatchable capacity. You are not, if you're adding renewables, you are not making the other redundant. You still need it. You actually virtually have to run two systems. You have to run a system that is based on traditional generation, and you have to run a system, the renewable system, and they have to work together. And that duplication is the major thing that adds cost. And with renewable, you have to add a lot of transmission capacity to be able to connect the renewables where they are to where the grid is. Now, that adds what you call total system cost. The total system cost goes up because of that. So, again, these things have to work in complement. But as you add more renewables, you add more cost because you are duplicating as opposed to replacing. So that's really the issue. Now, the issue of MIDU-P and its cost and its lateness, is a thing that must be acknowledged and dealt with. But it doesn't mean, therefore, because you know coal and other type of generation takes longer, therefore you don't need them. You need only renewables. It doesn't work like that. Everywhere in the world, you know, especially in Europe, you see this, that even in Germany now, despite the fact that they have almost 250 gigawatt of installed capacity to supply around 80 gigawatt of demand, they are still needing more gas plants. They're planning to add 20 to 30 gigawatts of gas because even with that amount of renewables, the system is still not adequate to supply their country reliably. So those are the issues and the nuances that people miss in terms of the fact that you cannot replace dispatchable capacity with intermittent weather-dependent capacity.
I'm just wondering, what do you think will happen when Eskom retires tens of thousands of megawatts of capacity in 2032, when I think it plans to do so? There's no time to build another coal plant in that time.
What do you see in the plans, in the national plans, because you cannot replace dispatchable capacity with renewables? The plan, the two plans. The plan, one plan is to extend the lives of some of the coal power stations. That's one plan. The other, and this is what you see in most countries that retire coal stations, they add new natural gas capacity. To replace the dispatchable capacity, they add new natural gas. In the US, you see the biggest addition in capacity is natural gas. And the reason they do natural gas is that they've got lots of locally produced gas. So gas is cheaper. In Europe, the replacement of coal is not renewables. The replacement of coal is natural gas. And on top of the natural gas, then they add renewables. So if South Africa aims to retire a lot of coal, they're either going to replace that with natural gas or other forms of dispatchable capacity, because the renewables alone cannot replace coal. Renewables need backup. And that backup either comes from natural gas, coal, some battery. You will struggle to replace coal with batteries. So you're going to need either the extension of coal, new natural gas, or a combination thereof. Yes.
So where will our gas come from?
I think that's the biggest challenge. As much as in the IRP, the national plan, there's an expectation of gas, the big question is, where are we going to get the gas? Now, in Europe, where do they get the gas in Europe? In Germany, particularly, they used to get pipe gas from Russia. And then when that stopped, they started having what is called liquefied natural gas. That's the gas that comes in ships and is liquefied. And before you can use it, you have to, to gasify it again. Now, for South Africa, for now, the gas that we use in South Africa for other purposes come from Mozambique. Most of it come from Mozambique. Now, if you're going to rely on pipe gas, you're going to have to look at countries like Mozambique to increase that pipe gas. Or we're going to use LNG, which is liquefied natural gas that comes with ships and can source it from anywhere. The problem with that is it's actually quite expensive. And most of the time, and in fact, all the time, is dollar-based. So you actually get into the dollar economy, and then you get the risk of currency risk if the currency decline and you're tied to dollar-based LNG, you run forex risk. Now, that's a big question for South Africa. If you're going to have a lot of power generation based on natural gas, where are you going to get? Are you going to bring LNG? Are you going to have pipe gas or both? And what are the infrastructure that you need? And what is going to be the costing? Because, that's the thing about natural gas in terms of the cost compared to locally sourced coal. My view, and I think this is the reality that we're going to have to deal with, we're going to have to keep our coal much longer. And we're going to have to do a lot of things to clean up our coal. So that, from an air quality, it's much cleaner. But to accelerate and to go quickly out of coal, it's not actually very feasible.
But if coal is so much better than renewables, why is China building so much renewable capacity and shutting down coal stations before they even commissioned?
China is not shutting down coal stations. When you look at what China is doing, China is increasing the amount of coal that they're building. On top of that, they're also building a lot of renewables. Now, let me just give you the context. China is the biggest manufacturer of renewable in the world. For solar, they produce 80% of the solar that is sold in the world. Now, to be able to do that, they have to use coal to manufacture solar, because you cannot manufacture solar with solar. And most of the manufacturing is of solar is energy intensive. You smelt things, you use furnaces, and you cannot use solar power to power furnaces. Now, they use a lot of coal to produce a lot of solar and wind and, you know, electric vehicles. So there is no suggestion, there's no evidence that China is shutting down a lot of coal. They are increasing their coal production because their manufacturing of the solar panels and related stuff require a lot of energy. But they're also rolling out renewables. But the renewables are still a very small percentage of their total electricity production. So for a long time, China will burn a lot of coal and a lot of gas. They are building nuclear, they're building hydro, they're building all sorts of generation capacity alongside their increase of renewables. So they anticipate that they will slow down around 2030 in terms of their coal use, but that will also depend whether they fund other generations that can replace coal. But the likelihood of them shutting coal soon is not there based on the fact that for them to run these factories, the smelters that they are using to produce most of the clean technologies for the world, they require high volumes of electricity, and that volumes of electricity comes from coal.
Now, I just want to go to the 36.1% increase that Eskom asked for. How much higher would that have been if it were not for solar and wind?
It's difficult to say. I don't think the solar and wind decreases much of the need that Eskom wants for the prices. I haven't done the calculations. The biggest driver of the price of electricity in South Africa, one has been the capital that went into the big build in Eskom. The second part is the increase in the price of coal. And those are the biggest drivers. And of course there are things like non-payment that goes into that. But for now, I do not believe that renewables having a big impact in terms of the reduction of the prices that Eskom could have requested. Now, even if you go to countries, I go back to use European countries where they've accelerated their renewables. I mean, countries like Germany, they have an electricity price crisis because at the moment, Germany, UK, in some instances, neighboring countries, they suffer the highest prices of electricity despite the fact that they've got the highest amount of renewables. And that price is because, mostly is because they are exposed to high prices of gas, which they still need. Even if they deploy renewables, they still need a lot of gas to balance their renewables. And that gas comes at a high price. And it brings all of the prices up, including the price of renewables because of their market structure. So the deployment of renewables in any system does not necessarily bring the prices down, as we've seen with the countries where they are deploying at an accelerated stage as scale renewables.
Lastly, how do you see the future of nuclear for power generation in South Africa?
Well, I think nuclear is on the comeback. And I think when you look at, around the world, even, Germany shut down its nuclear, but there's even talk that they may come back to nuclear. The reason is very simple. We are going into an era where electricity demand is going up. There are many activities that are increasing the electricity demand. One of them, and I'm in the era of AI, artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence data centers are energy guzzlers. We have not seen a sector that demands so much electricity as we've seen with artificial intelligence. And most of the big, you know, the big tech companies, you know, the Metas, the Facebooks, the, you know, the, you know, the, you know, the guys that are using a lot of data, they are seeing a huge demand, and they can see that the current generation of solar and wind won't be able to fill that demand. They require a generation type that can be on 24/7 because their data centers are 24/7. That's where nuclear comes in, because nuclear is clean and it's also 24/7 generation. So they're investing, you know, in nuclear power. They are talking to nuclear investors to, you know, develop power projects for them. And that is increasing a huge demand of nuclear power in the world. Small modular reactors, which are, you know, still being developed, or, you know, conventional nuclear is actually on the comeback. So because nuclear is cleaner and is baseload and is 24/7, it attracts, you know, the technology company that run data centers that are also 24/7 operation. So I think nuclear is on the comeback. But of course, renewables will continue to increase. And in renewables, I've got a space, you know, in the world. And I mean, when you look at solar, for instance, if for the first time in the history of the world, you can have one panel, you know, providing a household, a small household, or you can have a million panels. So the ability to scale up from one panel to a million, that gives the, you know, the flexibility and the scalability of solar. And that's, you know, that's an important part of the power system. But it's not replacing what is required from what we call dispatchable capacity.
Before you go, sir, let me just ask you, what are the chances of load shedding coming back?
When you run a power system, you can never say there will never be load shedding, or there can never be a blackout. It's like, you know, when you run an airline, as much as you work to make sure there's never an airline crash, you can never say the probability is zero. But I think we're out of the risk that we've seen in the past 5 years, which I think started to ease in 2024. And that is likely because the base of the power stations, which is coal, there's been an improved performance. And there's also a refocus on coal, because at some point, I think around 2021, there was an impression created that you could actually walk away from coal, have wind and solar, and you're fine. And I think now everybody is sober up to the fact that we're going to have to take care of our coal power station as long as possible. Because the alternatives to replace the coal are not fully developed. So I'm confident that we will, you know, we're not going to see, you know, the crisis that we've seen with stage six load shedding almost every day. But you cannot never say that it will never come back. There may be other reasons that cause it, but I think we are beyond the worst.
I often see on social media people living in the townships complaining about a lot of load reduction still, though.
Look, I think the load reduction is, they're trying to solve a totally different problem. Where load shedding is a generalized lack of capacity in the country, load reduction is infrastructure capacity to specific communities. And it's historic. It has to do with the development of informal settlements, which come into a infrastructure that was not geared for the number of people in that particular area. That will continue until infrastructure is upgraded to take care of populations in particular areas. But it's caused by different things. Yeah, and I think it's an important thing to solve as well. As much as we solve load shedding, those who are experiencing load reduction, to them, it's the same as load shedding.
That's what they say. When Eskom announces there's no load shedding, they say, but we don't have power. So
exactly. To them, you know, having no power, whether it's load reduction or load shedding, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make any difference. They're without power, and it requires to be solved. As much as other things like debt collection, you know, those other things still need to be resolved to make the whole, you know, power system much more sustainable and resilient and affordable going forward.
Thank you very much, sir. That was Mr. Jacob Moroga, the former CEO of Eskom, speaking to BizNews, and I'm Chris Steyn.
Thank you.